a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
We're going to go ahead and get started in House Judiciary on this lovely snowy Friday. And I would like to welcome everybody listening in online and the members in the audience today. If you're going to testify, please sign in at the back. There's a sign-up sheet right by the door, by the podium, on the podium. We have a couple of pages. One I recognize because she ordered my pizzas for me. And she's also a rodeo star. So why don't you, pages, come forward and tell us your name and what high school you go to.
My name's Caitlin. I'm the pizza orderer. And I'm from Sturgis.
And I'm Lexi Antoine, and I go to Flandreau.
Welcome. Thank you. And enjoying your page term so far.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah, we love it.
Thank you. If anybody has handouts, make sure you distribute them through the pages to the members of the committee. We have four bills on our agenda today. And we'll get started shortly here. I need to have the secretary call the roll.
Representatives Wink,
here.
Killer,
here.
Feinstein,
here.
Gibson, Hoffman,
here.
Magstead,
here.
Kopp,
I'm happy.
Erickson,
here.
Stevens, Johns, Hayek,
here.
Hansen,
here.
Gosh.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, a quorum is present.
We have a quorum. I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes. Moved by Representative Stevens, seconded by Representative Hoffman. Those in favor of approving the minutes will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. We'll get right into our agenda. I'd like to thank Representative Hoffman for the jerky and the beverages. He did have a cell phone go off at the last meeting. Our first bill on the agenda today is Senate Bill 43, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the crossing of a railroad and to revise the penalty for certain railroad crossing violations by the driver of a commercial motor vehicle. We'll take proponent public testimony at this time on Senate Bill 43.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jenna Howell. I'm the Director of Legal and Regulatory Services for the Department of Public Safety. We bring you Senate Bill 43 this morning. It is, I want to be quite upfront, another federal compliance bill, but I think probably the least offensive that we have brought to you this year. In a 2009 review, the federal government told us that our statutes were out of compliance in regard to railroad crossing regulations. We disputed that finding in 2010 and said we don't really think we have to make these changes. It's kind of silly. You're wrong. We lost, and in September of last year, they came back and said, no, you do have to make these changes or else you will lose your highway funding and also your ability to issue commercial driver licenses. So we bring you this bill. It is actually very commonsensical and really very non-offensive in its actual content. The first section says that any person, if they are told by a law enforcement officer to stop as they approach a railroad crossing, must stop. The rest of the sections apply specifically to commercial drivers. If they are not otherwise required to stop and they are required to at least check to see if they can actually cross the railroad crossing without being stopped, hit by a train, they have to make sure that their undercarriage can clear it and that they have the full ability to get completely across the tracks. This does make any of these violations a Class 2 misdemeanor, and it also a violation also is a disqualifying event for a commercial driver. With that, I will stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Howell. Further proponents in Senate Bill 43.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Bill Nevin. I'm legal counsel for the Department of Transportation. As the previous speaker testified, the changes proposed by Senate Bill 43 are required in order to comply with federal motor carrier regulations. These changes need to be implemented by October of 2013, so this is the last chance we have to do that. The sanctions, as she indicated, for not being in compliance are the withholding of federal highway funds. The penalty for the first year of noncompliance is an amount up to 5% of the federal aid highway funds apportioned to the state. Those funds consist of money apportioned under MAP 21, the Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century. That's the new federal highway funding bill. There are two primary categories of funding that would be affected under MAP 21 and subject to the penalty. The first category is National Highway Performance Program funds. Under the previous federal highway funding bill, National Highway System funds and interstate maintenance funds, which used to be separate categories, have now been combined into one category, the National Highway Performance Program funds. That category of funding is used for construction of all the roads and bridges on the designated national highway system. The national highway system is a federally designated system which includes most of the primary highways in South Dakota and all of the interstate. It also now includes interstate maintenance dollars. This consolidation under the new federal funding bill will hopefully provide the department with greater flexibility to get the most bang for our buck, if you will. That's the biggest pot that would be subject to withholding. Based on current funding levels in MAP 21, we will receive about $163 million in National Highway Performance Program funds. 5% of that is a little over $8 million. 10% is about $16.3 million. The second category of funds that would be subject to the penalty is the Surface Transportation Program funds. Those funds are used for all other federally eligible programs, such as roads and bridges that are not on the national highway system, and a number of other programs. That's the second biggest pot at about $74.2 million, 5% of which is $3.71 million, and 10% about $7.1 million. Based on current funding levels, the total of 5% to be withheld the first year of noncompliance would be approximately $11,880,000. The 10% penalty for the second year and for each year thereafter comes to approximately $23,760,000. It's important to note that if we are subject to this sanction, those funds go away forever. They're no longer available for apportionment to South Dakota. They would essentially be reallocated to the states that are in compliance with these federal highway or federal motor carrier regulations. As you might imagine, such a loss would have a hugely negative impact on the department's transportation's construction program, and we would strongly urge this committee's support of Senate Bill 43. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand by for any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Nevin. Further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Myron Rao, President and Registered Lobbyist for the South Dakota Trucking Association, and I come forward as a somewhat reluctant proponent, but a proponent nonetheless. I understand from Mr. Nevin's testimony we have no choice. It's, again, gun-to-the-head legislation. My concern is on page 2, sections 2 and 3. I should say 3 and 4. It's obvious, you know, if you... You're not supposed to go on the track when there's a train there and that type of thing. What bothers me is, you know, they tell us our statute's not clear, and like I say, most of it's common sense, but now we have to make a decision on whether we can clear the track before we approach the track. And there's some, I'm going to only talk about one intersection, but I'm sure each one of you can think of an intersection in your community. I know there's several in Aberdeen, but I'm going to talk about the one right here in Pier on Sioux Avenue by the truck stop, by the gas station and the hospital. When you come around headed east on that street and there are two cars ahead of you or no cars ahead of you, you have to make a decision when that light changes. Can I clear the track? Can I clear the track? And my problem is not that we're going to be stopped on the track and there's an accident. I agree with all of that. The problem comes is... there is no train, and we end up getting caught there. Overzealous law enforcement could end up costing a trucker his livelihood because they're going to take his driver's license away. So I was saying I'm a reluctant or opponent. The other part is Section 4. That's a no-brainer. If you don't have the clearance under your vehicle, in other words, a low-boy trailer that's, and you've got a railroad track that's elevated, and so you're going to get hung up there, that's pretty much stupidity. I mean, I'm not defending that, but I'm a little concerned that law enforcement make sure they use some common sense in this. Otherwise, there'll probably be a time when we come back here, because it could end up costing a driver his livelihood because he couldn't make that decision in that short a period. And like I say, Aberdeen, I think there's somebody else going to testify about some places where this happens. Huron, I know, has a couple places too. So I just hope law enforcement does the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rao. Further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Deb Mortensen, and I am the registered lobbyist for the Associated General Contractors. We rise in grudging support of this bill today. AGC has always embraced a culture of safety on their job sites and in their shop. The reason that we give grudging support to this today is the manner in which they enforce adoption of this law. That's a pretty big hammer, the loss of the highway funds. So I'm done being grudging about it. I do encourage you to adopt the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further begrudging proponents? Seeing none. Any opponents on Senate Bill 43?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tim Even. I'm a registered lobbyist for the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. We're the guys that build and maintain the railroad tracks throughout the country. I guess we had grudging support. I'm kind of grudgingly opposed to this bill, and it's for the same reason Mr. Rao said on page 2, the third bullet, where it states, refrain from proceeding through a crossing if sufficient space is not available to drive completely through the crossing without stopping. The construction of our roads in relationship to the railroads make this kind of an impossible task for a driver in certain instances. I just jotted down a few. I've worked in the state for some 30-some years, and just from memory, right south out of Aberdeen, and I'd be concerned about the beef plant crossing. A westbound truck would approach the railroad tracks, stop, see the railroad's clear, and then they have to approach a stop sign on County Road 10, I believe, and they would be hanging on the railroad tracks. What are they to do? We've hit many trucks out near Summit. There's a gravel pit where they haul a pup behind the truck, and there's not sufficient space between the railroad tracks and Highway 12 to permit that pup to stop at the stop sign and not follow the railroad tracks. I just have concerns with how it would be enforced, and maybe we should think about identifying these areas and maybe doing something traffic-wise to alleviate it. I'm talking mainly about crossings that have no signals, no traffic lights, and there's many of them. Aberdeen clear to Warner, south of Woolsey. Just a concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Even. Further opponent testimony? Seeing none, we'll close the committee at this time to the taking of public testimony. We'll open up to questions by the committee. Any Representative Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Nevin, please. Mr. Nevin, hearing the concerns of the two reluctant opponents and page 2, subsection 3 of section 2 on page 2, refrain from proceeding through a crossing if sufficient space is not available to drive completely through the crossing. Is there anything that we can do as a state to, because of the trucks, if they have a pup on the back, they're going to cross, you know, stop first before the railroad tracks and then proceed, and then the space between the railroad track and the stop sign to enter the highway, they have to stop again. There's not sufficient space for that pup to follow without hanging over the railroad tracks. Can we change this statute, or are we going to be in violation with the federal law if we name the specific intersections where that's just not possible?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gibson, I'm not sure I have the answer to that right now. I recognize that is a problem. It would be in those situations, just from the configuration of the way the track is in proximity to the other roads. And it poses a problem whether or not we might be able to identify and exempt out certain intersections. I don't know for certain. I frankly have my doubts about whether that could be done and still not lose the federal highway funds.
Go ahead.
Is there any way that we could state then that if this happens, the driver of the truck would not lose his CDL license? Or
Mr. Chairman, again, I'm concerned that if we were to do something like that, the federal government would consider that we hadn't enacted a law that complies with the Federal Motor Carrier Regulation. I'm not sure what the answer to that problem is.
Go ahead.
Could you possibly check that out for the committee? Because they may have some kind of an exception in there, because, I mean, this is just a problem, not in a lot of areas, but it certainly is a problem in several areas that I personally know of. So,
Mr. Chairman, I certainly will check that out and provide that information.
Further questions by the committee? Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Mr. Niven also. Mr. Niven, I have one question. Would you say this was a government railroad job?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kopp, I'd rather not comment on that.
Further questions by the committee? Representative Feinstein.
Just a point of clarification. I assume Mr. Niven can answer it. Okay. I guess there are two questions just on how the bill works. The first is on line 6 and 7 of the first page. It just says, and a law enforcement officer or clearly visible audible signal. Is that relative only to when a train is approaching and maybe a signal's not working? Is that how I'm supposed to interpret that, when a law enforcement would be there to stop?
Go ahead, Mr. Nevin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, that's probably the most likely scenario. I'm not that familiar with it, but they wanted to add in there that if there isn't a signal, but there is a law enforcement officer directing the vehicle to stop, that they would be required to stop.
Okay.
Follow up? Mr. Chair, yeah, second question. Over on page 2, line 7, ensure there is sufficient undercarriage clearance before negotiating a crossing. I'm trying to envision why most crossings may or may not have it, and can you explain why that is even a question?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, Representative. I really don't know what the thinking was on that.
Okay. Further questions by the committee? I have a question for Mr. Rao. Particularly since you're former head of Highway Patrol, would you consider an amendment that would allow for a rolling stop in these situations for stop signs in situations where the commercial vehicle would not be able to come to a complete stop without covering the tracks and still be in compliance with our current stop sign violation?
Mr. Chairman, Again, wearing a uniform for 26 years, I can tell you that an officer, and that's what I liked about law enforcement, is the fact that I could make that decision out there based on what I saw. And I just hope that that is still the way it's done today. When we had this bill in the Senate, Senator Teason, who's the former chief of police in Rapid City, asked me a question similar to this and said, are you saying that the officers today aren't as tolerant and use as much discretion as they did when we were wearing uniform? And I said yes. So anyway, having said that, I think the answer is to let law enforcement make the decision. If we start talking about rolling stops, I think we're on a slippery slope. And that's going to cause, and then there's a crash, and then there's a problem. I'd rather let law enforcement make the decision based on, you know, again, let's take a zealous law enforcement officer that's now going to take this on because he knows that it exists in law. And then we take care of that officer with the rifle method rather than the shotgun method. I think that it'll work fine at the end of the day. But I'd rather not do that. Again, if you remember a couple of years ago, we talked about left hand on red on motorcycles, and we decided not to do that for the same reason. We thought it was a slippery slope. So I think that can be debated all day, but again,
you were a proponent on that bill.
Yes, I was, and I still am. that's a different animal. But I'm just saying, I think that would be a slippery slope, especially for commercial vehicles, to do that, and perhaps, again, put us out of compliance. Thank you.
Thank you. Same question for Mr. Even, and probably Mr. Nevin as well, whether you think that would put us out of compliance if we had such an amendment. But Mr. Even first, would you be amenable to an amendment like that to take care of your concern?
Well, my concerns would be there's traffic. The truck has to stop. Maybe we have to make these crossings through to stop the traffic the other way. If we're going to comply with this type of law. And if I can answer Mr. Feinstein's question,
go ahead.
Your indulgence. We have had trucks hung up on railroad crossings, particularly west of Ipswich area. We have a high-grade buildup, and some of the crossings are very steep. So that has happened in the past.
All right. We're going to close the committee portion to asking questions and then open up to committee discussion and or action. Any discussion or action by the committee? Representative Hayek?
I would move to pass.
Moved by Representative Hayek, seconded by Representative Gibson. Comments on your motion?
Well, we're held captive by the federal government. I don't think we have a choice. So I appreciate the comments from the people here today, but please be aware, law enforcement, of what's going on.
Thank you. Further comments, Representative Gibson?
And I would prefer not to use the word held hostage. We have $163 million and $74.2 million from the federal government. I think we should be grateful for those highway funds. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further comments by the committee? Seeing none, the motion is due pass. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Wink?
Aye.
Killer?
Aye.
Feinstein?
Aye.
Gibson?
Aye.
Hoffman?
Aye.
Magstead?
Aye.
Kopp?
No.
Erickson?
Aye.
Stevens?
Aye.
Johns?
Aye.
Hayek?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Gosch?
Aye.
Killer?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, that's 12 yeas and 1 nay.
Senate Bill 43 will go to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 120, an act to revise provisions related to consent to sexual activity. Proponent testimony, our own Representative Hayek.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and Hayek, District 14. And I'm here, this is, Senate Bill 120 is actually cleanup language. It consists of two sections. The first section deals with knowingly engaging in sexual activity with someone who is incapable of giving consent due to physical or mental capacity, And the second section deals with people who do not have that capacity. And Senate Bill 120 is actually a proposal to delete what is deemed to be archaic language other than his or her spouse in both sections. A little explanation on that. There are people who are married but may not want to engage in sexual relations with the other person. They may be estranged. We don't know. But currently, any person who is technically and legally married to another person is not raped if they have sex with that person, even though I'll give you a situation where a couple are maybe separated, planning to be divorced, still legally married. And that individual would possibly, I won't say man or woman, but either party may not choose to engage in intercourse with the other person but is forced to. That is not rape currently under the statute. So this would just be cleanup. And I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 120.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members of the House Judiciary Committee. I'm Diana Miller, and I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Network Against Family Violence and Sexual Assault. And I think Representative Hayek has done an excellent job of explaining what we also consider cleanup language. I would point out two other points, a little history on this bill. In the 1980s, there was a spousal rape section of law. And then in the 1990s, it was repealed. And then in 2004 and 5, there was a criminal code revision committee led by former Senator Lee Schoenbeck and Representative Joni Clark Cutler that went through the entire code for the purposes of cleanup and to try to organize various statutes under the correct statute number. Some we did miss a couple areas, and no question about it, that's why we're viewing this cleanup. This was one of the areas we missed. And then I would also point out, secondly, in Section 2222-1, there are no exclusions on rape. So this kind of in Section 1 and Section 2, where you're dealing with incapable of giving consent, and then also the issue of other than your spouse in Section 2 would be simply cleaning that up to match the statute in 2222-1. And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I respectfully ask for your support of Senate Bill 120. Thank you, and I'd stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 120? Seeing none, any opponent testimony? There is none. Questions by the committee? Representative Feinstein.
Thank you. I guess for Diana Miller, please.
Mr. Chairman, Diana Miller, South Dakota Network Against Family Violence and Sexual Assault.
I guess my question, 2005, we revised this statute, 7.2, and we didn't make the change then. I don't know of anybody in this room, other than staff maybe, that was here then. But was it, you're saying it wasn't discussed at that time and it was an oversight or?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question, Representative Feinstein. At that particular point, there were a number of sections that were looked at, and I think it was just an oversight on our part. And I'm not blaming anyone for not deleting that and making it consistent with 22-22.1. And unfortunately, that's probably the best answer I can give you, Representative Feinstein.
Thank you.
Follow-up? Any further questions by the committee? I have a question for Ms. Miller. I haven't had a chance to look at all these statutes and compare them for consistency purposes, but the age of consent in South Dakota is 16. And have you compared what you're doing here with statutes on sexual contact by those under 16 and compared that to an analysis of those who, with parental consent, could get married at an age less than 16 and in light of what you're doing with these statutes?
Mr. Chairman, Diana Miller, South Dakota Network Against Family Violence or Sexual Assault, Family Violence and Sexual Assault. Have I compared either Section 1 or Section 2? I believe these sections under age of consent and that are in other sections of law, so we did not go into that. We went into this simply because it dealt with consent of incapable of sexual activity. So I have not gone through the entire code to look for the inconsistency or consistencies. That was current language, the 15 years of age and older, for I don't know how many years. That's current language. I'm not changing anything to do with that.
Yeah, I guess that's my only concern is that currently under South Dakota law, if you're under the age of 16, no contact is allowed at all. And sexual contact is defined very, very, very broadly. And so if you had a situation where you had two 15-year-olds who were married with the consent of their parents, any type of contact they had as spouses would be a crime. Wouldn't you agree if this law came into effect, if we passed this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I would say that that particular situation is a little bit different. You have the consent and you have might be under a different section of law. This one here I'm dealing with, not capable of consenting, number one, and although capable of consenting has not consented. So if you're married and you're consented, I think you're talking about two different things.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Any discussion? Representative Hayek.
For your last question, I was kind of flipping through these, as you said, and under 22-22-7.3, sexual contact with child under 16 years of age as a misdemeanor, any person younger than 16 years of age who knowingly engages in sexual contact with another person other than his or her spouse, if such person is younger than 16 years of age, is guilty of a Class 1 misdemeanor. So the 15-year-olds who are married, I guess, are still okay.
Thank you for that clarification, Representative Hayek. We'll close the committee to the taking of questions of the public. Are the proponents or opponents open up to committee discussion and or action?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hoffman.
I move due pass the Senate Bill 120.
Second. It's moved by Representative Hoffman, second by Representative Magstad. Comments on your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's been explained very well. It's a cleanup statute, and I certainly think that anyone of normal moral character would consider this a good bill. Thank you very much.
Further comments? Who dare vote no now after that? Any further comments by the committee? Seeing none, the motion is due pass. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Wink.
Aye.
Killer.
Aye.
Feinstein.
Aye.
Gibson.
Aye.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Magstad.
Aye.
Kopp.
Aye.
Erickson.
Aye.
Stevens.
Aye.
Johns.
Aye.
Hayek.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Gosh.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, that's 13 ayes, no nays.
Representative Erickson.
No consent.
Any objection?
Object.
There is an objection, but House Bill 120 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That moves us to Senate Bill 147, an act to revise certain provisions related to domestic abuse and protection orders. Proponent testimony on Senate Bill 147.
Our Representative Lusk is not in the room yet. You want us to go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead. Proceed, and we can have a page go find him. Mr. Vargo, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm a bit of a neophyte. My name is Mark Vargo. I'm the Pennington County State's Attorney, and I apologize for any breaches in protocol here. There is a friendly amendment that we wish to propose to the bill for the committee's consideration. Since Representative Lust isn't here, I don't know if it's technically moved.
It is not, but we can have a page distribute the amendment, and we'll possibly take it up later in the committee. But go ahead, proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, the point of Senate Bill 147 is designed to narrow and simplify South Dakota Codified Law 25101, subsection 3. That when we were examining this law over the past couple of years, law enforcement and prosecutors in particular identified that there were certain overly broad definitions in that statute Most specifically, there were two that brought concern. First is the definition of consanguinity. Under the present law, persons related by consanguinity are subject to South Dakota's domestic violence law. South Dakota uses the term consanguinity in a number of different statutes. It simply means related by blood. In every other instance, South Dakota's laws limit the degree of consanguinity. First degree being parent and child, brother and sister, second degree being niece and nephew, that sort of thing. We don't do that under our domestic violence law. Therefore, at least theoretically, if you take a straight reading of the statute, which Judge Johns will tell you we must when the language is plain, persons related to any degree are subject to South Dakota's codified laws under domestic violence. Whether you believe in Adam or Eve and Eve or in evolution, we all come back to a single pair. And so we felt that that was an inappropriate definition related to those persons related to each other. Second of all, there is the language persons who have lived together in the same household. We found that to be, again, terribly overbroad. Technically, again, that would apply to fraternity brothers, roommates, people who've lived in the same household without any romantic or sexual relationship of any kind. And therefore, they are also being subjected to South Dakota's domestic violence laws. Essentially, what is happening is that on the street at 2 o'clock in the morning, police officers are being asked to divine the intent of the South Dakota legislature. We felt that that was inappropriate. We felt that that was beyond the call for them. And we sought to find language that would make it very clear exactly what relationships and what behaviors are protected under South Dakota's domestic violence statutes. I want to tell you that these are essentially related to our laws only. The protections of mandatory arrest and the availability of protection orders hinges on the application of the domestic violence definition. And they exist because of the unique dynamic of domestic violence. When we break up a bar fight between two persons unknown to each other, or even two persons that are vaguely associated with one another, you almost never have to go back an hour later and break up that fight again. We found and we find that in circumstances where the parties have an emotional attachment, that is the case, and these altercations are far more dangerous than a similar altercation between persons unknown to each other. We ask the committee, therefore, to recommend to the floor a do-pass resolution, which will both narrow the application of our domestic violence law and clarify it. The other thing that I would like to point out to the committee is that this has no impact on the federal firearm statutes. I come to you as a person who, for 15 years, was the federal prosecutor on the west side of the river for firearms cases. Federal statute defines domestic violence for itself. If South Dakota had no domestic violence statute whatsoever, the federal firearm statutes would still prohibit the possession of a firearm by a person convicted of what the federal government believes to be a crime of domestic violence. So our statute, whether we narrow it so tightly that we're only talking about persons who have been married 10 years or more, or whether we expand it, as we essentially have here, has no impact on that federal statute. And so what we are asking you to do is to clarify and narrow, for purposes of law enforcement, the availability of these protections only to the people that we really believe merit and need those protections. And I will remain available for questioning later on.
Further proponents.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. David Lust, District 34. Sorry I'm late. I was listening and wasn't sure when my bill is going to be up. So what he said is basically my testimony. State Attorney Vargo's far more positioned than me to discuss the intricacies of prosecution of crimes, especially the domestic violence crimes, and how this will assist him and people in his profession in doing just that. So I don't have anything of substance to add other than I support the bill and what it purports to do. So thank you.
Thank
Mr. Chairman,
you,
members of the committee.
Representative. Further proponent testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Carrie Gonzer, and I represent the South Dakota State's Attorneys Association. We, too, support this bill and the proposed amendment.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good
Morning again, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Judiciary Committee. I'm Diana Miller, registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Network Against Family Violence and Sexual Assault. And I think you had a very good... Oh, Mr. Chairman, may I speak to the amendment that was distributed also in addition to the bill?
Let's hold off on that.
On the amendment? Okay. I will speak just to the bill then. The whole intent of this was when we started, and this is not, and I repeat that, not the same bill as last year. We worked with the Family Heritage Alliance and Mr. Vargo throughout the summer and to design a bill that would narrow the scope and clearly deal with some of the issues both groups felt needed to be protected, such as elderly people that live together or are in a romantic relationship, and you need to protect them. Unfortunately, I mean, I'd like to sit up here and say domestic violence is on the decrease and we don't have situations like that, but I can't. Society has changed, and consequently, we are in a situation where we have to try to provide the best protection for the victims that we can at that particular point. Secondly, I would point out this is only narrowing the definition. It has nothing to do with who decides, because you have levels of law enforcement that deal with that. You have prosecutors that decide whether to charge out or not charge. And you also have the court system and a judge and or a judge. I would also comment that in this particular bill, I think we deal with situations of dating. I want to point out one other example. And this is not necessarily something I like to talk about, but a young person goes out and they partake in some beverages. And consequently, they end up in a situation where they are assaulted, but they don't remember anything. And we have referred to that as the date rape drug. And consequently, you have situations of domestic violence, and they may be attacked at that point, and they don't know anything about that. There are all kinds of things in dating relationships you need to look at with young and old. So we just try to narrow the focus and get at and try to give some direction, at least to law enforcement, when you get a call such as this. Hopefully we don't have too many of these calls. But I thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd respectfully ask that you adopt Senate Bill 147.
Further proponents on Senate Bill 147?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee here today. I am Dale Barcher. I'm a registered lobbyist with the Family Heritage Alliance Action. We rise in support of SB 147 with the friendly amendment as distributed here today. Family Heritage Alliance is driven by her mission to champion the values of faith, family, and freedom in the public policy arena across the state of South Dakota and beyond. Thus, we have endorsed this bill because we know that freedom comes at a cost. It is never free. Oftentimes, our law enforcement officers bear the consequences of that cost. This bill is simply another tool for their use in doing their job well, right, and to the best of their ability. We believe SB 147 will assist our law officers in maintaining and controlling our future domestic abuse encounters. We appreciate the fact that Pennington County State's Attorney invited us to the table in the drafting of this bill. This added section number 2 of our domestic abuse statute, as amended before you distributed, simplifies and clarifies domestic abuse situation for our men and women in blue. We respectfully ask for your support of SB 147 with the friendly amendment as distributed. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Barcher. Further proponents on Senate Bill 147? Seeing none. Any opponents? Seeing none. We'll close the committee to the taking of public testimony and open up to questions by the committee. Any questions by the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hayek.
Mr. Vargo. I am looking at the amendment, and I have concerns that individuals who are living together and have been living together, never married, maybe at one point in time were very close to each other, and whether this be an elderly couple or not, and there ends up being some abuse. And you have the individual on the stand, and they've been charged with domestic abuse, and so they say, we are not involved in a significant romantic or sexual relationship and have not been for 4 years. We've continued to live under the same house, and he's beat the tar out of her, I'll say that, this time. Maybe she got him last time. But under this statute, there is no domestic abuse as currently written. Is that correct?
Go ahead, Mr. Vargo.
Thank you. I would say that that will become a factual determination for the judge and jury. The hypothesis that you've just given me, the hypothetical that you've just given me, has a very long relationship followed by a fairly lengthy period of estrangement, but still some sort of contact. Whether or not that is still a significant romantic or sexual relationship, I would say that the relationship does not end when the people cease to have sexual relations, and I would say that it doesn't end necessarily when they cease to have romantic feelings. And then the length of time since that has happened would in all likelihood be the determining factor or one of the major determining factors for the judge and jury.
Follow up? The language says involved in a significant romantic or sexual relationship. It has no past tense. It has a current relationship. Am I reading that correctly? The amendment says persons involved in a significant romantic or sexual relationship.
I respectfully, Representative Hayek, I think actually we do have the language is to strike everything after been. If you look to subsection C, persons who are or have been, and then it would say involved in a significant romantic or sexual relationship. So we do have a past tense there.
Follow up? Further questions? Representative Gibson?
I hope, because this is a little bit hurried, but...
Representative Gibson, ask your question.
Mr. Vargo, correct me if I'm wrong here, but doesn't this bill and with the amendment, can I discuss that with him since it's been... Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. With this amendment, then, doesn't it make it abundantly clear to you as an officer that college roommates and same-sex renters aren't in a domestic relationship? And doesn't that help you to determine whether to charge them with domestic abuse or not?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Absolutely, Representative Gibson. That was one of the points of bringing this statute, is we felt that people who had been cohabitant in a broader sense, roommates, fraternity brothers, sorority sisters, all of those people who shared a house for financial reasons when they first start working, all of those people are presently covered under South Dakota's domestic violence laws as written. And we are asking law enforcement officers to decide whether to utilize the tools of those laws, even though they are mandatory on the street, as I said, at 2 o'clock in the morning. And we feel that this gives law enforcement much better guidance and really narrows this statute back to the core group of people that we believe are appropriately covered by the statutes.
Go ahead.
And if these persons were charged with domestic abuse out on the street, then they would lose many privileges, like their hunting privileges, for example, which are important to people in South Dakota, technically forever. Is that correct?
Go ahead.
Chairman? Not technically correct, Representative. Those privileges and the impact on our hunting privileges in particular is related to the firearms laws. Those are federal statutes. The federal statutes under 18 United States Code, Section 922 and 921, refer to what they define as domestic violence. And so what our statute says does not affect whether a person will lose their hunting privileges. So whether we change this law, we can neither expand nor contract the effect of the federal law by our actions here today.
Representative Johns.
Questions for Mr. Vargo?
Go ahead.
Thank you. If there is an assault, our law currently does cover for that, does it not? The officer would make an arrest and the person would be prosecuted, and when they appear before the judge as a condition of the bond, the judge would set as a condition that they have no contact with that individual. So isn't this circumstance already covered by our law?
It can be, but it is not covered as immediately. The mandatory arrest provisions which exist for domestic violence, again, under current law, and the availability of the protection orders outside of a criminal context. In other words, a protection order can be issued whether or not the defendant has made his initial appearance, and not as a bond condition, but as a protection order. So there are aspects of the domestic violence law that apply only when the circumstance of domestic violence exists and not for simple assault. Those are the two primary ones that I know that I deal with regularly.
Follow up. And if a domestic protection order is issued, they do lose their right, at least during the pendency of that protection order, to possess firearms. Do they not?
Mr. Chairman, under federal law, that is correct.
No. Further questions by the committee? I've got some questions, Mr. Vargo. The bill before us that references the statutes 25-10-1 has no criminal provision in it, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. It is not an independent criminal statute. It links back to other criminal statutes.
Yeah. The domestic violence statute that we're looking at does not have a criminal provision in it, correct?
That is correct.
A violation, or somebody who is included within this section, does not get arrested or go to jail as being part of the list of folks in this section, in and of itself, absent a separate simple assault criminal penalty.
Correct.
Would you agree also that currently, and as you propose the change, the label would still be family or household members, but you seek to take it outside of family and household by including folks who don't live together but who may be in a dating relationship? Isn't that correct?
I guess that depends on your definition of household. Our thought process was that these are people who are engaged with one another in a relationship much like a household. So I guess your suggestion, or if your intimation, is that we should change that language as well, that might be appropriate.
Do you have a copy of the federal statute that defines domestic violence and who's included in that?
I do. Would you like me to read it, or would you like me to have copies made?
I'd like to see it. I just want to confirm this is what I had found online. It reads exactly the same that we had found online, and this federal definition does not include dating relationships. So wouldn't you agree then that you're expanding the state definition beyond that of the federal definition?
In the sense that our statutes and the carry over in terms of protection orders and mandatory arrest might apply to some people not covered by the federal law? Yes.
Okay. One more question. Representative Johns pointed out that you've got the criminal violation, or the criminal provisions in other sections of the law that provide for simple assault. And when that happens, no matter what the situation, whether it's in a home or in a restaurant or bar, the arresting officer, whether it's a mandatory arrest under the domestic abuse sections, he could determine himself with his discretion whether somebody should be arrested. Wouldn't that be correct? Whether or not, in a situation where it would not a domestic violence label would not apply, the arresting officer could still arrest somebody and take them out of the situation.
That is correct. What we have on the books right now mandates arrests for people who, as we point out, used to be roommates, who are third cousins. Our statutes as presently written apply that mandatory arrest much further than we believe appropriate, and we're asking the committee to assist us in narrowing that and defining it for law enforcement.
Okay, Mr. Weiger, I would agree with the intent of that portion of it, but I think this bill goes way beyond that. So I'll save that for comments. Thank you, Mr. Vargo. We're going to open up to discussion and or action by the committee. Thank you. Any comments or action by
Mr.
the committee?
Chairman,
Representative Hayek.
A follow-up question, and I'm struggling with this in that I'm feeling that for some reason we're changing this in a way that we're getting – we won't necessarily include those people who are living together – but we've gone outside into another kind of relationship that, as was pointed out by you and by Representative Johns, you know, we've got the assault statutes. So I want to make sure, as we look at it, we used to have people who were living under the same roof. And now we're doing away with that. We have to demonstrate that they have some other type of relationship. And I think the fact that people live together maybe is why we have these domestic relations statutes on the books, and we have the differential. So that's I'm struggling with that.
Further comments under action, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have an amendment.
Is it a motion to amend?
It is. Thank you. On page 2, line 5, strike line 5. And on page 2, strike lines 22, 23, and 24.
Wait a second.
Second.
Thank you. The motion would be to strike line 5 on page 1, and I imagine to adjust the letters accordingly for the subsections, then to eliminate lines 22 through 24 on page 2 as well. Comments on your motion?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. If it is a concern of this committee that the section about the dating relationship is too broad, this would certainly alleviate that concern. Thank you.
Further comments on the motion? Representative Hayek?
Well, I don't know if this is appropriate. A subsequent motion?
Substitute motion?
State your motion. Including his motion and adding to it?
Yeah, you can offer to amend the amendment.
And that would be on page 1, line 13, persons living in the same household. Put that back in under, I guess it could be subsection C.
Yeah. Okay.
Is there a second?
Does everybody understand? There's a second. You need the names of the people. Representative Hayek moved the substitute motion to amend the amendment. Representative John seconded it. Further comments on your motion?
Just for clarification, C then would become persons living in the same household.
So the motion before the body at this point is the previously stated motion with the addition of keeping the lines persons living in the same household in the statute. Is that correct? Further comments by the committee? Seeing none, those in favor of the substitute motion will say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. That motion carries. Further comments and or action on Senate Bill 147 as amended? Representative Feinstein?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Could we be clarified exactly now what the bill says, if you don't mind?
Sure. On page 1, the language would be family or household, persons living in the same household. We're going to have to do some cleanup on that, LRC staff. You got it. But essentially, it would read family or household member, including persons living in the same household, or any two persons who share one of the following relationships, then the following language, and then eliminate line 5 on page 2 and lines 22 through 24.
Mr. Speaker, actually, my motion was to keep that page as it currently is written now in the proposal, family or household.
The whole...
Any two persons who share one of the following relationships, A, spouse, B, former spouse, C, would be persons living in the same household, D, persons who have had a child together or are expecting a child together, and then reading the same down until line 21.
Okay.
Did I make that? So the first page stays the same, and we take the persons living in the same household as the new C.
Okay.
And member would.
Was that everybody's understanding except the chairs?
No, it wasn't my understanding. Thank you for clarification.
member.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry about that. I had it wrong, but I think most people had it correct, except for Representative Hoffman and I. So. Further comments under action. Representative Wink?
With the addition of the substitute motion, are we back to having it pertain to frat houses and sorority houses?
Go ahead.
I believe that would be an interpretation by the court, living in the same household. It technically, it could be.
Well, you have discretion with the prosecutorial
correct.
Staff.
Correct. Prosecutorial discretion could officer. Have the opportunity. I think they can charge it out either domestic abuse or simple assault or aggravated assault, depending on the circumstances. So they then have that option.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it was my understanding that was part of the reason that we had this bill coming before us is that some of the law enforcement officers were going to those situations and this would help clarify what they could and could not do. So it appears to me that it puts those law enforcement officers back in that situation, but that's fine.
Go ahead, Representative.
I guess my concern through the whole thing was that we were eliminating then those persons who were living in the household together. And the officer has, I believe, that discretion, and maybe Mr. Vargo wants to clarify, to either as a simple assault or a domestic assault, depending on the relationship, you know, if they're living on a residential street, not married, never been married, but so...
Further comments under action? Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion to amend.
State your motion.
I would move that we eliminate the new line C. Strike the new line C.
Second.
Comments on your motion?
Well, this is turning into quite the hearing. You know, I have real concerns with the language as written, and I think it was a worthy bill in that it was removing persons living in the same household. Because of these situations where you've got two friends living in an apartment, two college mates living in the same dorm or what have you, certainly those instances should not fall under our domestic abuse laws. And so I would have real concerns with that, and I would support leaving persons living in the same household out of this bill.
Further comments, Representative Johns?
Yes, I do have a comment. Thank you. My concern is that many people prefer to live together anymore and not get married, and that would capture all these people that are living together and not married, and you've got a case of domestic abuse, and I think we need the protection for someone that's living under those circumstances.
Add to a number of elderly people, for whatever reason, will choose to cohabit. They want the companionship. They want to be together, but they don't want to remarry. And that is happening to a large degree today. And those situations also should be included.
All right. Further comments on the motion? Representative Wink?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I only raised the question. I know that we cannot, put into statute something for every situation, so I think I would stay with the previous amendment rather than the most recent one. Thank you.
Further comments on the motion? Seeing none, those in favor of the motion to amend will say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
Nay.
I'm in doubt. Those in favor of the motion will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll. Just for clarification, the motion is to eliminate the new line C, which would include persons living together.
Representatives Wink?
Nay.
Killer?
No.
Feinstein?
No.
Gibson?
No.
Hoffman?
Aye.
Megsted?
Aye.
Kopp?
Aye.
Erickson?
No.
Stevens?
No.
Johns?
No.
Hayek?
No.
Hansen?
Aye.
Gosh.
Aye.
One, two, three, four.
That's five yeas and eight yeas.
Eight nays. That motion fails. Further action on Senate Bill 147 is amended. Representative Johns.
Move do pass as amended.
Second. Moved by Representative Johns, second by Representative Erickson. Comments on your motion?
No, I think it's insufficient.
Thank you. Those in favor of the do pass motion amended will say aye. Those opposed, Representative Magstadt.
Yeah, I'd hate to throw another amendment at it, but 147J8, did that ever get moved, and is that something that still is a sort of a problem that takes care of all of that? All right. Thank you. I just want to make sure.
All right. Those in favor of the do pass as amended motion will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Wink.
Aye.
Killer.
Aye.
Feinstein.
No.
Gibson.
Aye.
Hoffman.
No.
Magstead.
Aye.
Kopp.
Aye.
Erickson.
Aye.
Stevens.
Aye.
Johns.
Aye.
Hayek.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Gosh.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's 10 yeas, 3 nays.
Senate Bill 147 will go to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Takes us to our final bill on the agenda, which is Senate Bill 174, which has a title that is almost lengthier than the bill. An act to provide that out-of-country foreign judgment need not be recognized if the cause of action resulted in a defamation judgment obtained in a jurisdiction outside the United States, unless a court in the state first determines that the defamation law applied in the foreign court's adjudication provided at least as much protection for freedom of speech and press as would be provided in the state by enacting the Free Speech Defense Act. Proponent testimony on Senate Bill 174. Representative Stevens, you want to lead it off? And can we have a page go next door and get Senator Lederman? Okay. Go ahead. Proceed. Proponent testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members of the community, thank you so much for the time allowed here. I've been running back and forth. We've got a vote happening right now in the other room. I would please ask for your indulgence to have this bill deferred till Monday. Some suggestions have come to light for a friendly amendment, and I think that it's going to make the bill a heck of a lot better, and it's going to keep the discussion in this room to a minimum if we were able to have the weekend to draft the amendment and come back on Monday.
And just for the record, say your name into the microphone.
State Senator Dan Lederman from District 16. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we'll defer Senate Bill 174 our next meeting, which is Monday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of committee. Thank you.
With that, that concludes our business for today. I'd entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Representative Wink, second by Representative Killer. Those in favor of adjourning will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. We are adjourned.